In the 1950s, England, sex, race, and class were three subjects that polite filmmakers chose to ignore. But director Tony Richardson, playwright John Osborne, and producer Harry Saltzman were not polite filmmakers. They founded Woodfall Film Productions in 1956 to bring frank, unapologetic drama to the big screen. And beginning tomorrow, 14 of their films will be screened for Leading the Charge, Woodfall Film Productions and the Revolution in 60s British Cinema, a series that runs through July 26 at the Film Society of Lincoln Center's Walter Reed Theater. I'm very pleased that it has brought actress and Woodfall collaborator Vanessa Redgrave back to my show today. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. You were there at the start of the revolution, so to speak. Did the people involved see it in those kinds of terms? Did they,
well,
from the start,
start,
did you they think you were doing something revolutionary?
From the start for me was a Sunday up at Stratford-on-Avon, and Paul Robeson and Mary Ewer and Sam Wanamaker, and I was a walk-on in the production of Othello, which Tony was directing. And we were rehearsing it, and Tony invited us all to come to this little tiny old cinema in a Stratford-on-Avon where nothing happened at all except Shakespeare performances. It was dead for the young people. And he said, come and see this film I've made. And we all trooped in, the entire company. And we saw Look Back in Anger. This is February 1959. It came out in 59. We all knew Richard Burton because he'd acted at Stratford-on-Avon brilliantly. And we all knew Jamie Dith Evans, who played Jimmy Porter's mother, Ma Porter, brilliantly, right out of her, what she was known for, the kind of role she was known for. And we were, all of us, I'll only speak for myself, struck a heap by this film, which at last was about life as we knew it, and more about life than we knew it, and certainly unknown in British cinema at the time, which didn't open the door to any subject as the ones you've mentioned, including crime or police corruption or any of those things.
Well, it was adapted
and
from the Osborne play.
And it was an absolute eye-opener.
It was adapted from John Osborne's play and starred his wife, Mary Ewer, also as the wife. Had it been forced to have been changed a lot from the stage to the film, to the screen, because there was a lot of censorship in England at the time, wasn't there?
Oh, well, there was the Film Censorship Board. But the film, I don't know what problems they had at the time, because, and I'm sure they probably did, but whatever the problems may have been, Richard Burton as Jimmy Porter, Mary Ewer, and the other actors, including a whole slew of British actors in this Midlands town, quite a lot of it shot on location in the jazz clubs and the markets and so on. At last, here was a British film which made us feel as excited as the French films by Truffaut, for instance, Quatre Cents Clous, or Godard, for instance. Cinematically, the script, the performances, the themes that were uncovered, this massive clash taking place in the story, which was actually, of course, taking place in life between the young generation and the older generation.
Well, Americans were falling in love with Elvis Presley at that time and just beginning to enjoy color television, moving to the suburbs. But we also had the burgeoning civil rights movement. Abstract expressionism was the dominant art style of the time. The beat writers had really had a major impact on American literature. And in England, was anything like that happening?
Well, let's cross a couple of times across the Atlantic. And let's recall, Tony admired American cinema and more enormously. And let's just remember that Zinnemann, who started life as a documentary filmmaker, editor,
Fred Zinnemann,
that's where he learnt all his craft, the basis, groundwork for his extraordinary mastership of cinema. So don't let's forget that Zinnemann made The Search immediately after the Second World War, the defeat of the Nazis, and a lot of it was on location in bombed German cities. And let's not forget that he made High Noon and made that on location in 20 days, very, very cheaply. So actually there's comings and goings, as often is the case in cinema history, as there is in all other aspects of
but
history.
You're also suggesting that the British films, which until that time pretty much have been made in studios like Ealing, now suddenly with Woodfall starts going out on location, like the French, like Fred Zinnemann and a few others in America, and that really changes the whole look of these movies. There's a documentary side to it. The British had always done these great documentaries, especially during the war. Do you see any kind of link between them and what Tony was interested in doing?
Well, again, we can speak of the American link because Look Back in Anger wasn't made on British money.
Really?
Let's remember it was Americans, and also thanks to the producer, Harry Saltzman, of that movie, who was then had just co-founded Woodfall.
And where does the Richardson. Name Woodfall come from?
I've no idea. It's a lovely name. I've always loved it. All the Woodfall films were American money. And actually, when you look at British cinema history, there was only a very brief period when British films were financed in Britain, and they were the Carol Reed days. And you can think of the 30s films like The Stars Look Down, for instance, and Way to the Stars, a lot of which were made on, had scenes that were shot on location. But that had kind of vanished as an approach. So it's perfectly true to say that Tony Richardson and Carol Rice and Lindsay Anderson pioneered. It wasn't that there'd been no documentary made on location before, but it was, as they said, a free spirit, a free cinema, which broke a lot of conventions cinematically, as well as in themes.
And when we say Woodfall, we pretty much are saying Tony Richardson, because he directed 11 of these 14 films. He was also your husband and the father of your two daughters. What do you think defines a Tony Richardson film?
He was an iconoclast in life and in cinema. And that was one of the joyous things about working with him on his films, that everybody had joy in working, complete joy, because he'd break rules, he'd joke and laugh about things that still quite shock people, not by use of obscene language, but by the liveliness of his mind.
Well, he also came out of the theater, and a number of the films that he made are adaptations of plays. Hamlet, Look Back in Anger, A Taste of Honey, A Delicate Balance. But they don't look like movies of plays. So he obviously felt like he had made that transition in his own head.
Yes, he
did. Did he direct differently in the theater, do you think? Because you worked with him both places.
Yes, I did. Well, he was always ready to break the rules. And rules are wonderful as long as they serve a theme and an occasion and a story and so on. And they need to be broken when they become a confining limit to present life and to the present new young generation and to the technicians involved. I mean, when I worked with Peter Finch, directed by Tony in Chekhov's The Seagull, Peter Finch and I, with Tony's permission, of course, we wouldn't have done it otherwise, we had a long, very important scene together, and it was agreed that I was on stage speaking to the audience and that Peter could come on at any point on any side of the stage he wished that wasn't anything to do with what had been plotted, and he and I would improvise together as far as the moves were concerned.
And you wanted to do that because it made for an excitement each night, or it prevented you from just getting into some kind of a rut?
Well, I think we were both professional enough to do our best to not be in a rut, but there are times when it is extremely stimulating for the scene, not only for the actors, but for the actual scene, when to be really surprised and not really not know where someone is coming on is of an enormous benefit to the scene.
My guest is Vanessa Redgrave. We're talking about Leading the Charge, Woodfall Film Productions, and the revolution in 60s British cinema, which is beginning tomorrow and running through July 26th at the Film Society of Lincoln Center's Walter Reed Theater. You will be introducing a screening of The Charge of the Light Brigade Monday, the 16th at 6:15, and you appear in that film. What was it like to make?
Well, I was only, unfortunately, in some of the English scenes because a lot of it was shot in Turkey, replacing the Crimea, which it wasn't possible to shoot in then, in 1967. But, my brother is also in the film, and Corin will also be at the opening when we introduce The Charge. Now, it was a wonderful thing because Tony had gathered together not only his wonderful cinematographer, lighting cameraman David Watkin, who used only candlelight, and I mean only candlelight, for some of the interior scenes, and insisted that not one single woman, with one exception, was allowed to even have mascara on, let alone a foundation. And that was a revolution that the ladies, on the whole, resisted with might and main. So an entire makeup crew were employed to follow every lady wherever she went to make sure that she didn't whip out her mascara and get some dark lashes on. And the result can be, this is only one of the elements in the film.
And these are the sorts of things we associate later with Kubrick, the candlelight, Lars von Trier, but we're talking about a film that was made in, 1960 or so?
No, it was actually made in 1967.
67, but still before all of these
innovators. But it also initiated an animation. It was the first time animation had been used in a major feature film.
It's about the Crimean War, but it still strikes us as relevant today, especially with Britain fighting in another conflict, which is rather unpopular. Tomorrow at 6:30, your sister Lynn will introduce the Woodfall production that marked her film debut,
yes.
Tom Jones.
Yes.
Now, why did Woodfall decide to adapt that novel, other than the fact that it's one of the great novels of British literature?
Well, because Henry Fielding himself was rather an iconoclast in the literary world. And this book that he wrote broke all the conventions of writing novels. I forget the exact year. You'll probably know, Leonard, but I forget the year that Henry Fielding wrote Tom Jones.
I don't remember. I did read the book.
It was not only a bestseller, but it was really about a young generation that was breaking all the rules and everything that was going on at that time. Extremely funny, and has the most extraordinary cast in it. Albert Finney, of course, had come through the theatre, first of all. We acted together in Othello when he played Cassio in 1959 and understudied Laurence Olivier. And that's as true, I notice, of American cinema as of British cinema. Actors who we think of today, rightly, as brilliant actors, you name it. Marlon Brando came through the theatre, through Tennessee Williams. Al Pacino came through the theatre. In fact, he decided he wanted to become an actor when he saw a company playing Chekhov in the Bronx and wanted to know more about Russian writers and was lucky enough to have a teacher who helped him get access to it.
Well, the casting of these films are usually young actors who became famous later, like Richard Burton, Laurence Olivier was already famous, Anthony Hopkins, even Mick Jagger. But it seems to me that the way Woodfall casts its films is to call on various members of the Redgrave household.
Yes, well, it was... I always hesitate to say, well, it was all very much a family affair, because the family was much larger than our particular family. My mother acted in a lot of Tony's films. She's in Tom Jones. She died in 2003, but she was in it. A whole lot of Royal Court actors were in it. Edith Evans was in it. And it's extraordinary to see, mentioning Dame Edith, that her Ma Porter, as the mother of a working-class guy, is irreproachable. I mean, you couldn't fault her on any level. She is totally naturalistically convincing. And yet, normally, she was famous for playing high-powered, upper-class, aristocratic ladies.
She was a great actress. There's also The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner, which is a fabulous
film. Yes.
And A Taste of Honey really...
And Michael, my dad, was in that. Yes,
A Taste of Honey kind of changed the British censorship laws as much as any film, didn't it?
I don't know the history of the censorship
laws. Well, it challenged the rating standards of the British Board of Film Censors.
Oh, yes, they were always challenging the rating
because it
standards.
Dealt with interracial romance, premarital sex, homosexuality, abortion, all the taboo subjects of the time.
So it was a big hit. And rightly so.
And so were most of these films hits?
Yeah, most of them were.
Why
did
it stop?
The Charge of the
them?
Light Brigade wasn't, but and Tom Jones. It's very interesting how we can be glad that there's cross-fertilization today, certainly in the cinema and somewhat in the theater too, because Tom Jones, when it came out, the British critics with one accord slammed it. Do you know how it became a hit and made its way to Oscar time and so on? Was via the French critics, who went wild about its new techniques and the irreverence and the hilarity and modernity of this film. And that caught the American distributors' attention, and then it got a big, big showing in the United States.
But then
the British critics hated it.
Woodfall kind of fell apart. Tony made other films, and Harry Saltzman went on to produce the James Bond films.
Yes, but that was long, long, long previously.
But why, with all the success, did Woodfall fall apart?
Well, I don't think it fell apart. It was, you know, some people died, and some key members died. Tony's last films, Blue Skies, which Jessica Lange won the Oscar for, with Tommy Lee Jones, was the last big feature film he made, and that wasn't a Woodfall film, it's true.
Two of his films will be shown this month, The Border and A Delicate Balance.
Mm.
The
I never
post
saw
Woodfalls.
The Delicate Balance, but The Border is a terrific film with Jack Nicholson, yes.
A reminder that Vanessa Redgrave and her brother Corin Redgrave will be introducing a screening of The Charge of the Light Brigade, one of the only films that wasn't a hit for Woodfall, on this coming Monday, the 16th at 6:15. Leading the Charge, Woodfall Film Productions and the Revolution in 60s British Cinema begins tomorrow and runs through July 26th at the Film Society of Lincoln Center's Walter Reed Theater. For more information about the series, you can visit our show page at wnyc.org. And are you going to try to see some of these other films? Because I'm sure that unless you are one of those people who owns DVDs of everything, you haven't seen a couple of these in quite a while.
Yes, and some I've never seen. I would love to be able to get to see Mama Don't Allow, but it unfortunately is being shown in an evening when I'm
you're working
in the
these
theater.
Days. Well, yeah, we should point out that you're in
the
a
Loneliness
play.
Of the Long Distance Runner is one of my very, very favorite cinematically, and its theme of a boy who's in one of those terrible prisons for young people.
Thank you so much, Vanessa Redgrave.
Thank you.